Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And during the second part of the show, we'll be speaking with Phil Francis. He's the chairman of the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks. And he's here to talk about an interesting bill that just passed the U.S. Senate called the Great American Outdoors Act. Phil, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell us about the Great American Outdoors Act. What does this bill do?
Well, it provides funding to address the deferred maintenance backlog for our national parks. The national parks backlog totals about $12 billion, and with an annual budget of about $3 billion, it's been nearly impossible for the national parks to make a lot of progress in addressing our critical infrastructure needs. This provides the funding for it, and we're very excited because it has bipartisan support.
So what kind of critical infrastructure are we looking at?
Well, about half of the backlog has to do with park roads, and that's about $6 billion. But there's a lot of other projects that need to be done, too, restoring infrastructure needs. I know when I was superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway, we had about $1.2 billion worth of assets that we needed to take care of each and every year. And so we have aging buildings. You know, if you go back to some of the parks like Yellowstone that was created way back in 1872, or parks like Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park was established in 1890, the infrastructure is getting old and a lot of repairs are needed. So maintenance to grounds and trails and buildings and roads, visitor centers are all needed.
Yeah, and that's important, Phil, because this isn't about building new roads or new bridges or new buildings. This is simply about fixing what's already there.
That's exactly right. And with an aging infrastructure, you think about your own personal home. You know, after you've been there for a while, you might need to replace your heating and air conditioning unit. You know, it needs new painting, new roofs. And if you don't take care of it, then the cost of maintaining your structures and maintaining your assets actually goes up. So this does a lot of things. It helps to keep the deferred maintenance from growing. It helps to lower the amount of deferred maintenance that is needed. It's going to improve the quality of the visitor experience. It will help the national parks protect their important resources. So it is truly a wonderful thing. And with the American public, you know, loves our national parks. We had about 327 million visits, I think, in 2019. And the public spent about $40 billion in the local economy. So it benefits not only the national parks, it benefits the gateway communities. Tourism is a great economic engine, and so this is something that will help continue to protect our parks as well as provide a great economic stimulus.
Which reminds me of what happened down at Arches National Park just a couple weeks ago when they opened up for the first time since, the end of March now, I believe it was, and they had so much traffic that starting at 6 a.m. when they opened, that by 9 a.m. they had to close the park. They were that overwhelmed. People wanted to get outside. Where do they want to go first? They want to go to the national parks.
Well, that's right. And studies are showing that people who are visiting the parks are now new users. There's been a great amount of new interest developed in our national parks. So, you know, this is the next generation of park users and park stewards. And the great outdoors is a great thing in many different ways. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your physical health. I think the idea of getting back to nature and connecting with nature is a great thing, and so this helps all of that.
So do you have a sense of, you know, how visitation has increased over, say, the last decade in our national parks? You know, just from, I guess, anecdotal experience at our parks here in Utah, it feels like a different world from, you know, a decade ago. But is that just us, or does that reflect the actual visitation?
No. I think we saw a big increase that was occurred way back in 2016 when the National Park Service celebrated its 100th anniversary. And there was a program called Find Your Parks. Hmm. Well, people have found them. and it's a great thing. The challenges facing the National Park Service right now with regard to COVID-19 are unprecedented. What a very difficult situation for the leaders of our national park system. To make sure that the parks are safe while providing for access. And let me just say one thing. It's really important that visitors who come to our national parks follow the CDC guidelines, especially with regard to, you know, social distancing. Hmm. There aren't enough employees in the national park system to really monitor and enforce any kind of guidelines with regard to CDC. So it's incumbent upon people who visit to plan ahead and make sure they're safe once they arrive.
So the Great American Outdoors Act, this is legislation that passed out of the Senate last week. And it was a bipartisan approval, correct?
Yes. I think more than two-thirds, over 80 senators voted to move this bill forward.
Wow.
That's very encouraging and pretty unusual these days.
It is.
That's for sure. And now it's going on to the House, where I'm sure it will probably pass there. I guess the biggest question is, will the president sign it? Any sense there?
Yeah, well, I certainly hope he will. I think he will. I think it's consistent with his goals of providing infrastructure investment.
Mm.
I think it's a way to help stimulate the economy and keep the very important segment of our economic engine going forward. So it seems to be consistent with the administration's goals. So I'm optimistic that this is finally going to go through. And I'm very thankful to the members of the Senate and the House who are supporting this and the administration.
Yes.
So I was going to ask that. Who are the members of the Senate and the House who are championing this bill and who created
sponsored it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a long list, and I don't have that list in front of me. But it's very long. I think that, once again, there was bipartisan support. I don't remember if it was over 80 or 70 different senators, I think, finally helped to champion this bill going through. So there have been a number of people who've really done a good job to make this happen.
We're speaking with Phil Francis. He's the chairman of the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks, and we're talking about the recent passing out of the U.S. Senate of the Great American Outdoors Act. Among other things, this act would also fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. It's a program that invests in national parks, trails, and green spaces around the country. That must be encouraging, too, because I believe that's a fund that always had to be approved every year over year. Right. Now it's getting full funding for the future as well.
Well, that's exactly right. The bill makes the funding for the Land and Water Conservation Fund permanent.
Permanent.
And although there's been an authorization for $900 million to be expended under the Land and Water Conservation Fund, it always took an annual appropriation.
Mm.
And there weren't many occasions, if any, I think there was one maybe, where all the funds were appropriated. This would generate up to $1.9 billion that would be spread among the National Park Service and the Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife Service and BLM and the Bureau of Indian Education. So there are a lot of people and a lot of assets that visitors have come to love and enjoy that will benefit from this.
So you had mentioned that there was, I think, gosh, a $12 billion backlog of projects. So what kind of funding does this Great American Outdoors Act create on a one-time basis?
Well, it really depends upon revenues that come from the development of oil, gas, coal, and alternative or renewable energy on federal lands and waters. About 50% of those revenues would be directed toward this, the funding this this great need that the parks and the Forest Service and other agencies need. So, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I just remember is that I believe it was a year or so ago there was a report put out by the National Park Service that looked at the impacts that climate change was going to have on national parks around the country, focused on coastal-based national parks, Everglades National Park, other structures that were along the coast that were being threatened by rising sea levels. So that's another element, in addition to general maintenance, like you talk about, Phil, you know, of old age and stuff. Now you have things like sea level rise or more intense storms that are also going to impact national parks in one form or another. That goes into maintenance and upkeep as well.
That's right. And, you know, I don't know what year, you know, there's a lot of disagreement about when these impacts are going to occur, but I know that we're already feeling those impacts. Water levels have risen. I know cities like Miami have already begun a pretty strong effort to address this issue. But if you think about places like, well, the Outer Banks, for one.
Yes.
Where I think the highest elevation there is probably like 10 feet. So yeah, you're exactly right. And almost all of the coastal parks would be affected. So this could certainly help that effort, too.
Talk to us a little bit about the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks. Who are you, and how long have you been around?
Well, thank you for asking that question. We used to be called the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees, and we changed our name to the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks. But most of our members, and we have a little over 1,800 members, are actually retired National Park Service employees. I spent 41 years in the National Park Service, and so we like to say that we are the voices of experience. We engage on issues. We provide information to the Congress. We certainly advocate for more funding for the national parks so that, you know, that's one thing about the deferred maintenance backlog. You know, it's one thing to address the deferred maintenance backlog, which is critically needed, but we also need that day-to-day maintenance so that the deferred maintenance backlog doesn't occur again, and so that we can protect our park resources and so that we can provide outstanding service to the visiting public.
Well, one other thing that you kind of mentioned offhand was, you know, there aren't enough Park Service employees to kind of enforce, you know, we were talking about it in the setting of social distancing and, you know, COVID-19. There aren't enough Park Service employees to enforce those policies, but I think I don't know, again, at least in my own personal experience, when you're at these parks, it's pretty frequent that you may not even see a park employee because there are so many visitors, and that I imagine these employees are overwhelmed. So is that something that your organization also lobbies for or tries to support as additional manpower on the ground?
Yeah, we really do. I know that in speaking with the National Park Service, I learned that about 20% or more of our law enforcement ranger staff has gone away due to lack of funding. The expense side has gone up faster than the appropriation side. And that's also been true of our maintenance staff, also been true of our resource management staff. So our oversight of national parks and our regional offices, those offices have seen reductions of up to 50% of their staff. And those people provide engineering support and personnel support, contracting support, resource management support, and they provide the leadership for the national parks. So there are a lot of needs, and we need to address those needs. So yes, we advocate for more funding. We try to be as fact-based as possible, and we want to protect our parks for the next generation and the generations that come afterwards.
I mean, it's such an obvious job, program, opportunity, and there are so many people who, given the choice, would probably say, you know what, I'll take a job and on a maintenance crew at a national park if it's in that setting.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm outdoors and I'm enjoy, you know, it's such a blind spot, you know, when you think about appropriating funds, more funds, $12 billion, Bill. I'm sure you would have preferred if it was $25 billion, and I'm sure you could get if you got $25 billion, you'd find something to do with it. So $12 billion is probably just a nice start.
Well, there's different categories of funding. $12 billion is a great goal to try to achieve in terms of eliminating this deferred maintenance. It's going to take a long time. Mm. Really, to catch up. I know years ago, back in the 50s, we started the National Park Service started a program called Mission 66, and that was to, in 10 years from 1956 to 1966, the goal was to catch up on all the needs of the National Park Service. Well, that's exactly where we are again. So this is going to be a long-term and sustained effort, and thanks to the wording of the bill, it makes our ability to address these backlog issues possible.
Well, talk to us for a few minutes about your career in the National Park Service. How did you get started and why?
I was really lucky. Mm-hmm. I was a college student, and my elementary school principal had worked as a seasonal ranger. And the school board changed his 9-month-a-year job to 12-month-a-year job, so he couldn't continue to work for the National Park Service. So he said to me, why don't you go apply for my job? So I did, and I was lucky enough to get it. And I just fell in love with it. It's one of these great opportunities where you have a job that you love, that you look forward to getting up each and every morning and going to work. So I worked in a Revolutionary War park in South Carolina, Kings Mountain National Military Park, and then through a series of promotions, I went to Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park, our nation's capital. I went to Shenandoah National Park and Yosemite National Park. Worked in a regional office in Santa Fe. I was deputy superintendent of the Great Smokies for 11 years and superintendent of the Blue Ridge Parkway for 8. I think I traveled to about 45 states during that time.
Wow.
And America is such a beautiful place. And these parks really represent the best of America. And these national parks also do something else that's really important. And it's really the keeper of the stories for the national park system. And I think the parks are doing a pretty good job of trying to tell the entire story, whereas in the past, maybe we didn't do that so well. So, for example, we're talking about the Underground Railroad. We're talking about the Gullah Geechees down in Charleston, South Carolina. Hmm. We're talking more about Native American. It's just a magnificent organization. The National Park Service is a holder of one of the largest collections of artifacts of anyone in the country. I think maybe second behind the Smithsonian Institution. So I remember actually holding a presidential seal, I think it was George Washington's, way back when, in my hands.
Wow.
And so it's just And the people are so dedicated.
Hmm.
We used to say that our rangers are paid in sunsets. And I understand that, because I've seen some remarkable things in my four decades working for the National Park System, whether it's in Yosemite and the park was closed due to a fire, but just seeing that magnificence of these special places. I remember going to Canyonlands way back in 1970, and I think it helped me decide then that the national parks are a pretty special place. And when I got the opportunity to work in them, I really didn't appreciate how important they are to our country.
Right.
Well, your dedication is inspiring. Even now, after you've retired from the Park Service itself, you're still out there advocating for these incredible spaces that we all enjoy and we all get to use. So thanks so much for your work on this.
Right.
Well, thank you so much. It's a labor of love. We've got a great executive council, former superintendents, people who've worked in the Washington office, people who've worked in parks all across the country. We've got members from almost every state. And the interest is very high, and the energy is high, and people continue to be dedicated. I think our blood turns green. So,
well, between your blood turning green and being paid in sunsets, I don't know how you do it. But I will say this, Phil. I went to college in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah.
And as a college student, I always looked at the park as, someplace to ride my bike or go study or floor. And I didn't really fully appreciate the setting until after I left. And I read Michael Schara's book, Killer Angels. But now I go back there periodically. And it is, it's an example of an incredible national park. But it's also an example of history that has been well maintained and hopefully will continue to be maintained.
Well, I certainly hope so. Dan Brown, who was my predecessor on the Blue Ridge Parkway, is from Gettysburg. He started his career there before going away to college at Johns Hopkins. I think people who have the opportunity to spend some time in the parks really do understand why it's important that we take care of them. And we hope people who come will take the time and really getting engaged in the history and stories the parks have to offer. And I hope they will continue to support our national park system for many, many years to come.
Phil Francis, he's the chairman of the Coalition to Protect America's National Parks. Phil, do you have a website?
Yes, we do. It's www.protectnps.org.
Perfect. Well, Phil, thank you so much for taking the time. And I think we're going to reach out to you again periodically to get some updates on how maintenance is going.
Well, thank you for that. And I appreciate your interest. It makes a big difference to be able to reach out to you as well as all your listeners.
All right. Thanks again, Phil. Let's